Hi, everybody. This is Hello Gorgeous Mama, your host, Britt Contreras, and I'm excited because I have a special guest today. Her name is Cynthia Martin, and I'm excited because we're going to talk about all the things we always talk about, which is spirituality, motherhood, and everything in between. You know, I have to mention mental health, and I have to talk about everything that empowers women. So what better way to bring than to bring someone that loves to talk about the same? She is a spiritual mind mastery coach, and she helps people by breaking generational cycles. And I am so glad that we're going to have her here today because she can relate in motherhood as well. She has two daughters, a 13 and a 9-year-old. And she's been with her husband for over 22 years, but they've been married for 15 years. And I would love to get that story with her of how they met. And we're excited because we met, through divine intervention, whatever you want to think of it, coincidence. We do not believe everything happens for a reason. So I'm going to let her dive into her company, Lumiere Energy, but I just wanted to give a quick, biography of who she is and how we met. So without further, let's get to know Cynthia Martin. How are you doing today?
I'm great, Britt. So happy to be here with you and to share this wonderful conversation that we're about to have with your listeners and to spark some inspiration in them and hopefully encourage them to explore new possibilities. Are you okay if we just take like a minute to just breathe into and create a container so that we can tap into the energy of the listener so that we really just bring it all the way through? Are you okay with that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So just kind of getting, not kind of, just allowing ourselves to get really present. And in this honoring of in gratitude to whatever divine powers aligned our lives to come together at this time with a common purpose, just to be of service to other people who are navigating the difficulties of life and trying to find their way and transitioning, whether they're mothers, fathers, parents, or they're thinking about it, or they're just looking to birth something into the world, that we allow space to be the channel for that message to come through us in that co-creative partnership, for our hearts to be the ones that speak to their hearts, that it's much greater than just the two of us, that we are opening up a sacred space for others to find safety and to hearing comfort in our stories, to give them courage, to give them empowerment, to give them strength to make decisions that are going to change their life for the better or for their children, to break generational cycles, to break collective cycles. And with that, we thank all the invisible helpers that are here with us right now that are celebrating this conversation and that will speak through us as well. Taking a deep breath.
We definitely felt the shift, both of us, because sometimes like as moms and just women in general, or anybody for that matter, you have so much stuff going on that you kind of like are still in your mindset is like in one area and you're doing all these other things, but you're not focused on the one thing at a time kind of thing. I know you can relate to that, Cynthia.
Absolutely. And as modern women who are wearing, 10 times the number of hats that moms, who have come before us, and not to take anything away because the things that our mothers and grandmothers had to endure for us to be able to do it better has certainly, it's something to honor. But we operate so much in this space of masculine energy and doing and doing and doing, and we forget to be present to ourselves and be connected to the moments, because we're so good at juggling life and wanting to keep the train moving without yes. falling off the track.
I know. And it's hard to sometimes get back on. I think that like, we're just like, we always feel like, oh, we got to do this perfect. Or if it doesn't go right, then everything's a mess. But I think that, with that, I want you, we were talking about how you started with Lumiere Energy, which is your company. And we're talking about your background and how you started out with seeking and healing spirituality for about 8 to 9 years, and you had a corporate background. So, and then you went into energy healing as well as when your firstborn was born. Mm-hmm. Then it kind of awakened this spirituality. But can you tell me when that first started, when your firstborn was born, how even spirituality came into your parameter, you know?
Absolutely. And like I said before, I'll do my best to keep it as concise as possible, right?
No, go ahead.
To sum up.
Share your story.
and the reason why I say that is because for anybody, I've been on the spiritual journey not knowing it. So most of my spiritual journey really started off in personal development and seeking a way to create a better life based on this idea of success that was passed on to me by my parents, because my parents are I'm a first generation. So both of my parents were, you know, they had an incredible life with lots of struggles, but they had this tenacity to come here to another country and supersede a lot of obstacles and let life lead them in such a way to create businesses for themselves and mm-hmm. to create a better life for us. But along the way, like a lot of our stories, there was a lot of gaps that couldn't be filled. There was a lot of trauma and pain and suffering for everyone involved. And but because my parents were entrepreneurs, I knew, because my friends, this dynamic of, you know, having a lot of friends who didn't have a lot, and I had more than most people from a material perspective, I knew that there was more possibility. So I always pursued entrepreneurship, and my mm-hmm. seeking started with wanting to pursue success based on the model of material success, but with the motivation of like wanting to help people. So mm-hmm. I adopted and adapted to that way of thinking. And it set me on this journey since I was 17 to now I'm 47. So that's 30 years of a journey that started in personal development. And I would seek and, you know, I did everything under the sun as an entrepreneur. I did network marketing. Real estate, like everything that anybody could ever imagine an entrepreneur could consider, I did over the course of those 30 years as part of my process of seeking. And what I discovered maybe about, I would say, you know, 12 years ago, actually longer. So it was right around the time I was preparing to become a mom is when my spiritual journey was activated. But what I discovered is that I was on this roller coaster of personal development where I was really just kind of like an addict. I was an addict to personal development, and I didn't understand why, because I would have this roller coaster ride of like, okay, I get really motivated. I go to workshops. I go to masterminds. I have invested so much money in personal development from over the course of these last, you know, few decades that, it brought a lot of wonderful things, but it took me a really long time to understand that the reason why I was addicted to it was that connection, that open-hearted, like being in a space with like-minded people who wanted to do good in the world. Mm-hmm. But then once we came out of the workshops or whatever, like I'd be knocking on their doors and having these amazing connections and these experiences. And then it's like, it would fade.
Right.
And I get what that. Right. And so yeah. It just wanting to connect with my people and just desperate to figure out where I belonged. And when I started this experience, I would get this question all the time because I was very successful, especially as a Latina woman. Okay. I'm a first generation Latina. And right. Yes. So, and it comes with a lot of responsibility because we're expected to break cycles of like poverty and all these things and be successful and go to school and do all the checkbox things, which I did, but I was always coming to these places of feeling really empty and unsatisfied. And then I go back into some personal development thing. And then I feel really, really great for a while. And then I would come down off, you know, like come off the high, and then I'd get into another one. And it was like this roller coaster ride for a really long time. And I finally got to a point where it just like, it wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't last anymore. Like I wasn't getting the fix that I used to, and I didn't know why. And I was in my relationship with my husband. We had a lot of sorting things out, because when we entered our relationship, we hadn't reconciled a lot of things. He came from a very difficult breakup, as did I. Mm-hmm. And we came together because we already knew each other. He used to do events and I used to go to them. So I already knew him from years prior, but when we reconnected through a friend and a group of friends, and we called ourselves the Broken Heart Club, because everybody had just came off of a really devastating relationship. But he and I had almost started something years before, and here we are, you know, 5 years later in this, just hanging out with a bunch of people who were friends, and we're all kind of in the same boat, and we're just wanting to have fun and enjoy life. And we did for a while, but we had this, I don't know, like this unresolved chemistry. And never did I imagine that he and I would end up married with two kids, just put it that way. Right. And so it was just difficult, because when you come into a relationship, when you're still trying to heal things. And for me, it was a big catalyst, because that relationship that came out of was my daddy issues relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And, we put each other through hell and back, because we're both resolving a lot of those childhood traumas, but not knowing it. Mm-hmm. And making each other pay for it. And it was just really interesting how, it catalyzed a lot of things. And it's funny, because at one point I was so frustrated with a lot of the things that were going on, and I was expecting him to resolve a lot of my issues, not consciously, but I made him responsible for a lot of things. And there was a point where we had things had aligned for us to be part of this personal transformation thing. Then he said yes to it, because a couple friends of ours, they had just finished it and they were a mess. So we're kind of like, okay, well, we'll check it out to help ourselves, to help each other. Mm-hmm. And I was of the mindset of like, he's the one who needs it. He's effed up, right? And we go and do this thing. And it turns out that it was me that I needed to work on myself, even with everything, right? Like with this attitude of like, well, I've been doing work on myself for years, so I got it together. Yeah, right. But it was a beautiful experience how life was informing my direction, and the universe, mm-hmm. spirit, whatever you want to call it. But it was an important piece, because it was preparing me for a transition. And I went through this intense 4-month personal development journey that was, for the first time, was for me, not for me to grow a business or to try to become successful in something, or, you know, using all of these success methodologies and all these habit hacks, and which I was doing, but I was a mess. I was really like just not realizing how much stuff I was repressing, trying to have mm-hmm. this toxic positivity. And it was an amazing experience, because at this point I was preparing, we were already married. I was preparing to become a mother. And what I knew at some deep level, and just because of my upbringing and what I have learned, and I've always been a student of human behavior, and just always knowing that I'm like, okay, logically, there's this human being that's going to grow inside of me. There's no way that things don't get passed on. So I'm going to do my very best to clean house, right? Like mm-hmm. I want the apartment mm-hmm. to be as clean as possible from a mental, emotional, and physical perspective. And so I went into looking for a hypnotherapist. I'm like, okay, that makes sense to me. So I'm going to go check that out. I knew nothing about spirituality or hypnotherapy. The spirituality that I grew up with was really an interesting dynamic, because my dad was a self-proclaimed atheist. Growing up, he was like anti-religion because,
So a whole different spectrum. Yeah.
It's a whole different spectrum. Yeah. I had this really interesting dichotomy in my household where my mom was very spiritual, not from the traditional religious standpoint. She was very much about, you know, whether she had the language for it back then, but like the universe and nature. Mm. And she was just wholeheartedly she did, to the Catholic and the saints and the whole bit and the candles. And my dad was so opposed to all of that. And he would create this weird dynamic in our house, where it's like, on one hand, he was encouraging us to think for ourselves, but yet he was putting down, you know, different religions and things like that. And I just thought it was really, you know, curious looking back how this is the environment that I grew up in. So I grew up with a lot of resistance to that, not only because mm-hmm. of my own household, but I was seeking as a young person as well. I remember in high school having friends with different religious faiths and backgrounds, and they would all go to church, and then I would ask to go to church with them, you know, and to want to understand what the difference is. And I just had this conversation with a friend of mine a couple of days ago, where it's like, you know, it was sad to experience how the one thing that they had all in common was that they all believed in some higher power. And a lot of them
it's
had the
funny
same
name. That you say that, because I have like children, because I was literally just thinking that, like, about how, yeah, along the lines, like, they all believe in this like spiritual being, mm-hmm. and yet we're all pitted kind of like, you know,
against
looking down
each other.
On what, yeah, it's, yeah, yeah, it's insane. Because I mean, just a little bit background real quick of mine is kind of similar. My dad, but he was more into, like, he looked at all kinds of different religions, mm-hmm. so he would look at Buddhism, Hinduism, he would like, and he was open to exploring all those different religions. My mom, like, she was baptized Catholic, but my parents didn't actively go to church.
Yeah.
You know, I was also baptized Catholic, but then I, on my own, when I went into college, I decided to go to a Christian university. So mm-hmm. I got my Christian background. And then, but even still, like, I still go to church here and there, but like, it's more of like, I always say I'm more spiritual than religious.
Yes.
And that's it. And it's interesting though. Like, I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt
you. No, we have that parallel dynamic, because just like you said, my dad was a little bit more aggressive about it. Like I don't know if that he had another word to identify with, mm-hmm. but he just knew that he was definitely against the conventional, traditional mm-hmm. religious dogma. And he thought he was open-minded about a lot of things, because he did the same. He studied Buddhism and he was curious about, you know, different faiths and mm-hmm. metaphysical studies, but he had a lot of resistance and judgment about what my mom did. And it was a hard environment, because I could see the good that it did for my mom. And that's one of the things, like, I appreciate, and this is why I was always curious and wanted to understand, because what I was noticing in all of those experiences, when I would go and explore, and I would explore with the intent of understanding, like, I want to understand what it is that draws them to it. Why are they so passionate about defending? And that was the other thing, mm-hmm. like defending and fighting. That's what I never understood. And what I found was, it's like, okay, they all have this, like, what are the commonalities? I was always looking for the commonalities. The commonalities that they believed in this higher power that was good, but yet a lot of what I was experiencing is that there was this, a lot of judgment also being taught, like, to be oppositional to other peoples who didn't believe the same thing. And I'm like, okay, this is so weird. Like, they all believe this one thing, and they also equally judge each other. Mm-hmm. And that just didn't make sense to me. So I was just like, okay, this doesn't feel right. So I appreciate my dad's teachings of, like, make up your minds for yourselves, because mm-hmm. I was also baptized Catholic. But then on the other hand, I saw my mom that she wasn't pushing her agendas on anybody, that she would not, you know, engage in conversations or tell anybody anything, whether they believed what she believed or not. She just, like, from a human standpoint, which I appreciated as well. And she believed the natural stuff. So that made a little bit more sense to me. But growing up, it was a lot of resistance, because I just saw the things that people would do and how they would behave. And it just didn't make sense to me how, like, on one breath, they can be like, oh, you know, love and light or Jesus this. And then in the other breath, talking bad about their neighbor, or, you know, making bad choices that hurt their family or their loved ones, mm-hmm. or, you know, so it just didn't jive. Right. And so fast forward, when I got to that place of, like, I was open to prepare myself for motherhood, I went looking for hypnotherapy just to kind of get to any more deeper roots. And what the experience that I had was my first experience of spiritual awakening, because when she regressed me, I didn't do any research, because this is the way I approach life. I'd rather have experiences first and then go get information so that I can confirm and I can trust myself first before, without having it be diluted. And then in my first hypnotherapy session, I went to source. And I had this like out of this world experience, and I got to experience God in the infinite through my consciousness. And my hypnotherapist was so surprised. She's like, "Are you sure you've never done hypnotherapy before?" I'm like, "No, dude, I'm pretty sure. And this is not what I expected." So it kind of blew my mind. And long story short, as a result of that, I became a case study for her, and she ended up writing a book.
Was
one of the people in that book, because it had been the first time that she was able to experience that we in our consciousness, in that state of our mind, we can actually go beyond the body, but to source, not just a past life, because she specialized in doing past life regressions and all this stuff. She became my teacher. So I actually was trained by her.
What's the book called?
It's Home at the Tree of Life by Dr. Elena Gabor.
Okay. Awesome. We'll have to all look that up.
Yes.
you know, it's funny though, too. I always say funny because like when I see parallels or I see things that are similar to me, it's funny because I'm like, oh, if this is not enough convincing that things are not coincidental, I don't know what is. But, you know, again, we like, just for a recap for the audience, like me and Cynthia met through like a women's empowering group, and we're kind of helping to do exchanges for each other, like to help each other out in our spirituality. And we already had a like beautiful conversation prior to this. And then we just jived, you know, and we connected. But I know you're going to go into further about your daughter and how that kind of awakened, but similar, I started with a regression therapy myself.
Oh, interesting.
And I was pregnant with my second born at the time, but I didn't know when I first started it. And it, you know, for me, I didn't know my childhood trauma until that regression therapy. Like I knew it, but it was suppressed for so long that it wasn't at the forefront. I always wondered, you know, why certain things were the way they were, why I reacted to certain triggers. And I'll let you lead into your that, because I know you're gonna go into that more. But that's how we parallel too, is, you know, when I had my firstborn, a lot of things were starting to come to like, wait, what is this triggering me, and why is this happening? So
absolutely, I think we share that in common, and we've said that in our first conversation, where our children are our greatest teachers, and they came to activate our healing so that we can take our place in the world to pave that path for them. Right. And I think that the generation of mothers now, we're creating that new future for them, and it's beautiful. Because that's how we are breaking generational cycles. And although I don't just work with women or mothers, we are the catalyzing force at this time of the world, because we're having to reparent ourselves as we parent our children. And we're in a time where information is so much more accessible that we are healing with our kids and our parents. So I'm lucky because both of my parents are awake. And you know, my father was the villain in my story for a long time. And most of my healing was driven by trying to heal my wounds with him. And then I discovered my mother wound. And then that healing journey was activated right before I became a mother, which was really interesting. And I've grown with both of my parents. And that's a blessing that I have that a lot of people don't. And I've been able to help them grow as human beings. And like I was sharing before we started this call, if anything else, what I've learned that I would love for all of your listeners to walk away from is that we are growing with the people in our lives. Even when we think we know them, we get to be in a place where we can make room to know who they're becoming. And give them an opportunity to know us and who we're becoming. And that creates a new possibility, because as mothers, it's a big deal because our children go through different phases and we're becoming different mothers at each of the stages that they're becoming different people, right? Because there's this beautiful meme going around where it's an audio that's being reused and it's a man talking about how, you know, how he never thought he could fall in love with this little being that was born and it would, you know, just sleep and eat. And then it became a person that can, you know, start to crawl. And then it became a person that can start to walk and so on and so forth through the ages of their development. It's like, and now you're running around and you have all these ideas and you have all these stories. And it was so extraordinarily impactful, even with me who has been on this journey for a long time and I'm super self-aware, to recognize that we're falling in love with different people at every stage of their growth. Mm-hmm. And we get to fall in love with who we're becoming at every stage of that, of our own growth in parallel with them. And we get to look at that as in our relationships, whether it's in our relationships with our significant other, with our business partners, with our coworkers, because where we get really trapped is that believing that who we are with or who we're in relationship with, is we know them, mm-hmm. without realizing that they're becoming different people as are we, and that we can grow together in parallel. And sometimes we get to grow apart so that we can make room for ourselves and possibly come back together and possibly not. But it, as parents, I think that's a valuable gift to be able to recognize that at no point do you ever really know your child, because they're becoming different people at every stage, as are we. And so I just became a brand new mother again, because I'm now a mother of a teenager. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole new experience that's being birthed, right? And at the same time, my 9-year-old is starting to come in to explore her identity and the things that she likes and being influenced by her. And then I'm also growing because I'm shifting out of a stage in my purpose work and my business and how I'm going to serve the world. And those are all different people who are being born at the same time. And I think that's where we miss it, because the transitions is where the secret sauce is. And we overlook the transitions in the same way that we started this call, right? Mm-hmm. I made space for a pause so that we can transition from who we are being when we're just trying to keep life together, like everyone in organized and moving forward, and who we are truly.
Right.
In ourselves, within our minds and in our hearts and in our bodies, like to be present.
Yeah, exactly. I loved it too. Last time you were saying, like, you know, we have to love pretty much each stage of our motherhood as we're growing. And I kind of took that too from the last conversation I started implementing with my oldest and my middle, because, you know, there's 6 and 4, my youngest doesn't quite understand yet, but telling them, you know, like, I loved you when you were a baby. I loved you when you're a toddler. I love you now that you are 6, and I love mm-hmm. you now that you're 4. It's my 4-year-old, you know, like telling mm-hmm. them, I loved, you know, it's because I always tell my oldest, I'm like, you know, at my middle, like, it's hard for mommy to see you grow up, but I love that you're growing up, because yes. I love to see all the new things that you're going to be doing. And I think that's something that, you know, like our generations are starting to implement more into our parenting and stuff. Cause mm-hmm. I know with my parents' generation a little bit, some of my parenting is a little different than what they grew up with. So I even see, you know, my dad who grew up in a military background and has kind of been a little bit hardened throughout his life, mm-hmm. and where he's opening up more, and he's like a different, you know, they call him Lito. So he's a different Lito than, mm-hmm. you know, than who, with yeah. And I mean, my dad was always loving, and my parents, you know, there were some things that, you know, I did take away from when they parented me that I know that I'm trying to do a little bit differently, mm-hmm. You know, not to bash the way that they learned and how that, and I know that none of us are trying to do that, but sometimes when they hear things that, you know, they thought was their best, weren't so much the things that we wanted to take away. it's hard for them to hear that, but I think that now we try to, as parents, with our own kids, is realize when we make those mistakes to apologize and to, you know, sit them down and kind of hear them out and hear their feelings out more than what we were kind of allowed to share back then.
Yes.
You know, with our own parents. So, but yeah, a lot of, you know, my trauma came from different caregivers, but you know, that's where a lot of those suppressed memories came from.
Yes, no doubt.
But my, you know, it's good to know that you have that relationship with your own parents, and I'm able to have that relationship and see it like unfold with your own kids, I bet. So
apologize. It's about that inspired conversation, because this mm-hmm. is a conversation that needs to be had. And I think that's what I love most about you know, this podcast, that this platform gives us the opportunity to talk about those difficult mm-hmm. things, because we don't want to, and this is something that's really important, because anyone who's listening who feels like there's something inside of them that they're doing wrong, or they want to fix, or that their parents did, and they see that there's a pattern that they're trying to break, my biggest emphasis and one of the foundations of how I empower people is to really change the paradigm of what healing is. Mm-hmm. Healing is not about fixing what was broken or what was wrong, because there's nothing broken. You're not broken. You don't need to be fixed. You get to just go through a process of remembering what is inherently true for you, who you have always been, but somewhere along the lines, you decided to agree to something that you're not. Mm-hmm. And healing is really a journey of self-remembering. And restoring our grace, restoring our truth, restoring our authenticity, and undoing all the layers that we said yes to and adopted, and all the rules that were appropriate for a different time for other people who were doing their best, like our parents, right? Because mm-hmm. parenting is a brand new concept. Parenting is not something that was emphasized. And if you look at, you know, the industrial age of how school was born, they needed to educate. It wasn't for educating for evolving human beings. It was training us to be good employees, to be good assembly people, because it was in the industrial age in which schooling really started. Before mm-hmm. then, kids were helping hands on the farm.
Right.
So, you know, kids were part of making sure that the, you know, things kept running. And parents at that time didn't have the opportunities to really educate their kids or have an understanding of what the real purpose of educating children are. And there's a whole new, you know, world that we have access to important information, not only about ourselves, but how we can improve how we build relationships with our children and how we can see them, because our parents didn't have that. And in healing, it's not about bad mouthing or pathologizing the people who were part of those injuries in our memories, whatever they were, no matter how devastating. It's about giving permission to that part of us who endured those pains, who experienced those pains, to have a voice and a safe space to express what wasn't safe to express. Mm-hmm. And that's what healing is about. It's about restoring our grace, being able to remember things in a safe way so that we can get it out of the memory of our bodies, out of the memory of our deeper part of our brain, because a lot of people have a lot of information and education and a lot of access to knowledge, but yet they're still experiencing the wounding and the habits, and they get frustrated because they know better, but they're not doing better. And part of the reason why is because they're only tackling it from the intellectual, the psychological, and not the emotional and the neurosomatic, right? Like the body consciousness that stores the memory of pain and problems, and also joy and happiness. So I don't want to make it a scary thing, because we can also tap into our healing to remember the joy that is available to us. Because to be childlike, like watching our kids, how many times I'm like, I sit and I just watch my kids and be in a really present way. And I just did this the other day, just watching them dance and be silly. And I'm like, shoot, mm-hmm. I forgot how to do that. Mm-hmm. Like I've been adulting and being too serious. And like with my husband and my daughter, like they've been having a hard time connecting. And I told my husband, I said, you know why? I said, because you're only showing her the grown-up who's always too worried about all the stuff, right? The problems and the money and the finances, and she doesn't know the side of you that's fun and it's the best qualities about you, that you love music and you have this childlike joy when you listen to music and you do these wonderful things, but she hasn't seen that side of you. She hasn't got to experience that side. And so right. Now he's starting to look at it a little different, to find ways to connect with her, even though it's going to be very hard because he's never had to do that before. He's mm-hmm. never had to take care of people in that way, to understand them at that level. For him, it was like old school, you know, thinking of like, you don't ask people questions because you're being nosy and you don't get involved in other people's business.
Right.
And so he's having to break those cycles for himself so that he can connect with his children. So that's a healing journey in itself. And parenting becomes a healing journey as well, because we're having to look at ourselves and remember when we were those ages and not wanting to repeat for our kids what we went through.
Right.
And it gets to come from a place of empowerment, not fear, because we have a tendency to fall into that trap as well, to try to prevent the problems that we experience when we end up recreating them.
Yeah, that's me sometimes. I catch myself because, you know, like I know that most of my triggers come out when my kids are, you know, arguing with each other, or like they start screaming mm-hmm. and yelling and running around again. They're toddlers, so it's to be expected, you know, but at the same time, like I end up finding myself sometimes yelling back to stop what they're doing, and then mm-hmm. I catch myself, and then I get this huge mom guilt because I'm like, well, I'm trying to break cycles of, and I wasn't really yelled at. It's just that I grew up in a different household of hearing a lot of yelling. So, I mean, the caregivers that I had, they did a lot of yelling. So it was like, I think that's what triggers me a lot of times, because I'm like, okay, this brings me back, you know? And then, So then I have to, you know, talk to them, speak to them, and sit them down and explain, like, you know, I didn't mean to get so upset. There was something going on inside mommy that, you know, but maybe we can listen better by doing XYZ or whatever it is. But yeah, it's just, it's hard because I have so much fear behind, like you're talking about, mm-hmm. of anything bad happening to them. And It always reminds me of, Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
It sounds funny, but I remember there's a scene, and I don't know the exact quote, but basically the dad tells, or the son Nemo tells him, if you never let anything, or Dory says it, sorry. Dory says, you know, if you never let anything bad happen to Nemo, then nothing good would happen either, because you're basically trying to, you know, keep them in this little bubble the whole time, that you're not also letting them be free to experience life and to, you know, make their own mistakes and to recover from those own mistakes. I mean, granted, if it's like a huge safety issue, we know.
Well, right.
You know, but like, I mean, but the whole point of it is to let your kid go out and experience the world and, you know, be there for them if they need you, like with open arms, you know, to come back to, but also don't like have that umbilical cord attached the whole time, you know?
So. And the beauty of parenthood, and I just want to acknowledge that you are breaking the generational cycle by taking that time to, one, take responsibility for your misstep and addressing it in the appropriate moment and saying, hey, this is not okay. And I recognize that what just happened is not you, it's me. And I want to really emphasize that, because as mothers, we have this idea of motherhood that we create in our mind as what a perfect mother is. And what we're really saying to ourselves in that idea is that I don't want to make any of the mistakes that my parents made, because I know the damage that it did. So I'm trying not to damage my kids. And it creates this really painful cycle that we beat ourselves up. So it's just kind of changing that narrative and say, I'm going to make similar mistakes, but I'm breaking those cycles by giving the space for safety and communications and explaining to my children what my parents didn't have the language for. Mm-hmm. And giving us an opportunity to grow together and to create our own map of what's right for our family. And that's a different paradigm to operate from, because then it kind of takes the pressure off a bit. And you can, when you expect to make mistakes, and you, it changes the energy around it in terms of like how the pressure, because you go from trying to prevent and preempt and that anxiety, because anxiety is that. Anxiety is where the brain, the energy of the mind is split and trying to move forward in time to try to like stop every bad possibility that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it drains our energy. So when we change that and we shift that and say, you know what? Things that I that might scare me could very well happen and probably will, but I'm going to focus on being able to support myself and my kids when it happens.
Okay. So
do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes sense. No, definitely. And I think that is what I'm trying to step more into, is to be okay with myself, even sometimes making mistakes, because I think like, even though I know, and I think we talked about this last time, even though I know there's no such thing as a perfect person, perfect mom, perfect woman, men, whatever you want to, however you want to say, there's no such thing as perfection. Yet I find myself trying to be this perfect mom, you know, mostly mom. Like, yeah, I try to be a really good wife and everything too, but I think the most pressure I put on myself is this fear that I don't want to do this damage to my kids, or I don't want them to, you know, like, I know therapy is healthy and I do it, but I don't want them to be in therapy because of me.
Why?
You know, and sometimes I'm like, why am I so fixated on this, like, definition of trying to make sure they're gonna grow up, I know, and have moments where maybe they do tell me in the future, hey mom, I didn't really like how you did this back then, or whatever, and I have to be okay with that. And I am okay with it, already thinking about it, but still I find myself in this present moment of trying to like do everything right. And I think that you speaking on about allowing ourselves to make mistakes and actually teaches our kids that it's okay for them to make mistakes too. So
yeah, and it's saying to them it's okay and normal to be human.
Mm-hmm.
And so a couple of things I want to say, that you don't have to go against the grain. So one of the things that I love is I love working with people's, they believe that it's a shortcoming or that it's a problem, like, you know, perfectionism or mm-hmm. whatever psychological label that they've self diagnosed themselves with. Right. Mm-hmm. And I say, okay, we're going to work with that. So if you, if your brain is working with this notion that it wants to be perfect, then just redefine what perfect is.
Mm-hmm.
Let it have the perfectionism, just redefine what it is, and redefine perfect to be what you just acknowledged, is that you're a perfect mom for your kids because you're breaking the cycles of what you experienced by coming and taking responsibility for the missteps.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me a perfect mother for my kids.
I like that. That makes sense, because, and what do you, like, I just want to know, like, the thinking behind that, how does that help, like, rewarp the brain, I guess, like.
So your brain is operating on preset, like, settings, right? Like, you know how we have the, in our cars, we have, like, the treble and the bass, or we have certain settings, and, like, when we sit in front of our desk, the way we like to do things, there's mm-hmm. certain ways the brain operates. It already has its pathways. And you know how human behavior, we naturally want to operate on what is predictable, because it's safe,
mm-hmm.
right? It changed. That's why they say change is hard, because change, literally, you'd have to create new neural pathways in your brain, and you have to create disruptions to patterns in your brain. So by doing that and not creating massive disruptions where you're running, think of it as like a train going at, you know, 200 miles per hour, and then you're trying to stand in front of it with your hand out and hoping that it's going to stop. It's just not going to happen. So mm-hmm. rather than trying to stop the train, you slow it down and redirect it. So you know how they have those levers where it changes direction.
Mm-hmm.
You're just changing direction in its process and leading it down a different path that isn't so disruptive, where it generates resistance.
Mm. And that so makes perfect sense, actually. Perfect imperfection. Yeah. See, I am worried about the whole
thing. Right. And that's why I say when people come to me, I love, you know, they tell me like, I do this and this and this, and I hate it and I struggle because I'm always trying to stop it. I said, okay, well, stop trying to stop it. Mm-hmm. Let's work with the way you operate and stop making it a bad thing and use it to your advantage. And this is the thing. It's like, I specialize in working with people who have been called black sheep, who don't fit in, who are the weirdos, the, like, you know, the outcasts and all that, because that's where I used to identify. Even though I used to have a lot of friends, I never felt like I fit anywhere. And even in spirituality, when I started my journey, I felt like such an oddball because I wasn't all love and light and I wasn't able to like meditate all day long. I didn't want to be the monk on the hill and, you know, and it didn't make any sense because here in the same thing that I experienced with people, with their traditional faith. And I respect and totally honor that. And I believe wholeheartedly that if, whether it's faith-based or, you know, metaphysics or spirituality and however we define it, if it really genuinely gives you a sense of peace and it gives you the sense that of life making more sense to you and it makes your life better, then it's awesome. Mm-hmm. Right? Like I have no opinions on anybody. That's why like I've worked with people of all denominations and backgrounds and you know, it's like, that's for you. That's how you define your relationship with that power that's inside of you. And we work with that, right? But the other side, like with the way our brain works, like we have to stop going against our own grain. We have to stop trying to be anything else other than who we are. And then if we operate a certain way, we can use that and leverage it to our advantage. We keep as a, this person, this is why I'm really passionate about changing the narrative around personal development. It's not about fixing because there's nothing wrong with us. Like the way mm-hmm. our brain operates is because it operates that way for a reason. Those of us who've experienced trauma, our brain has chemically been reorganized, restructured. So we don't operate in the same way with someone who doesn't have trauma. So mm-hmm. trying to think positive is actually a disadvantage. Because we're suppressing the part of our brain that has been activated through trauma that's trying to keep us in survival, like it's trying mm-hmm. to protect us. So we got to look at that and give honoring to that and then use that and then work with it to navigate life in a better way. So that's why I say like if perfectionism is your thing or procrastination, it's like knowing that about yourself is already
both
right?
those,
but they're in parallel for various reasons. Mm-hmm. Right. But it's like, if you're using all of your energy to try to prevent yourself from procrastinating or not, you know, and avoid not being perfect, then you are misusing your energy and your power. Mm-hmm. Because you're pushing against your own grain versus if you said, I know these things about me, this is the way I normally operate. Let me get really present and aware and use it so that it supports me. So if I want to be perfect, let me redefine what perfect means. If I procrastinate, then I'm going to give myself permission to have space to do nothing so that I can satisfy that's part of me and then have spaces where I can be aware that I have the energy and I can bring satisfaction and joy and create a different motivation for the things that I need to get done. And so that I stop resisting it, right? It's like mm-hmm. really a deeper sense of self-discovery to really understand how you're wired, how you work. And if you have these things that are disruptive to you, then reframe them and use them as a power potential, right? So like, for example, fear, people, you know, are afraid of being afraid. And they're afraid of emotions and they're afraid of feeling, especially, you know, the men have gotten the short end of the stick, right? Mm-hmm. And they're trying to figure out all this stuff in this time of massive women's empowerment. They're trying to find their place and, you know, and it's really sad because it continues even with the new generations, boys mm-hmm. are still being put in a position of not being able to be okay with feeling. But you got to look at it as a creative potential, right? Emotions are such a beautiful resource of power right. because the most beautiful music, literature, movies, theater, like ideas, creativity has come from those deep-seated emotions, especially the harsh ones. Mm-hmm. and they impact people and they move people. So I'm like, just redefine how your relationship with fear is and use it to your advantage and stop defining it as all of these traits or these habits as disadvantages and work with them so that you can improve and make better habits. Mm-hmm. Right.
Wow. All of that is so impactful because I mean, I think I work with, you know, even like my husband, he's more kind of, I know you're mentioning your husband on a side conversation that we had, that he is more conventional thinking. And that's kind of like my husband a little bit too, where, you know, it's hard for him to show his emotions. He's mm-hmm. very like kind of hardwired into the fact, like, you know, guy men are to be strong and to mm-hmm. be supportive of their wives and, you know, their, or their partners. And it's, even his background, like his mom and dad, like they're more open now, but I think growing up he was ingrained that, you know, the mm-hmm. it's a Hispanic household as well, the man goes to work, you know, and makes a living, the woman stays at home, cooks and cleans, like the old traditional way of thinking. And even now, like, it's starting to warp in more to like they're a partnership, and, you know, this is how, and, you know, don't get me wrong, my mother-in-law, she's a strong woman, you know, she'll put you in your place quickly, but, and I love my mother, we get along. So, you know, but with my husband, I think he grew up too with that, like, men are to be men and you're not meant to cry. You're meant to be, you know, strong. And,
yeah.
And I, now he's starting to more show, especially having girls. Cause you yes. know, we have three
girl dads more. Have a, yeah. have it. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So he sometimes, and oh, my oldest, my 6-year-old, she feels her emotions. She's definitely an empath in all sorts of ways. So when he sees her just break down and cry over like a movie, it's like new to him. Because he's like, okay, how do I help her through this? And I think the way we've been talking about parenting and kind of not rewiring our brain. I don't know if that's the right word, but
yeah, like just reframing our attitudes. That's what it requires. Yeah. And that's the first step. Like if you want your listeners to have a takeaway, you know, they can put together, like that they can implement and apply right away. I can tell you that all healing, personal development, personal mastery, whether you're high performance or otherwise, the very first thing is self-awareness.
Right.
And if you are able to become self-aware, it's not a moment for you to be like, oh, I hate that I do this. No, it's a moment to really celebrate because you are in a state of mind where you can recognize, and that's the hardest part. So, so allowing yourself to say, you know what, I just did the hardest part. So what comes after, there's possibilities that I can do some things better. So I'm going to stop worrying and fixating that I suck and that I did this again, or that I'm like, I should be better, whatever, just beating ourselves up. It's to celebrate that power, because it takes a very, very intense amount of energy to be able to recognize those things about ourselves in a very conscious way, and just to give ourselves permission to like be human and then say, okay, I recognize this is what's happening when this is going on in my environment. So I'm going to be more conscious. I'm just going to pay more attention as to what's happening that builds up to that, so that I can support myself rather than fixating all of that energy of trying to prevent it from happening, because it's going to continue to be that vicious cycle. And so just by saying, you know what, this, I know that this happens when this goes on in my environment. So I'm going to set myself up to win, so that when I start feeling it a few steps before it fully happens, then I'm supported. And you can make that little shift. And that's the reframe. That's the first thing, and really apply that. And then the bigger piece of that, like when you're looking at yourself or anybody else, you want things to change in your environment. You have to change your attitude about it, attitude about yourself, your attitude about your partner, who you're working with, because people are always going to make you right. They're going to deliver what you expect of them. Because this is what's happening on an energetic level. You arrive before you get anywhere. So if you've ever had an experience where you're dreading going like to work or to a party or to see somebody, you already are entering an energetic space. So think of like a radio station. And those who are listening are probably familiar with, you know, frequency, the concepts of vibration, because everywhere you hear, even the tias, right? Like even the older generations are talking about energy and vibes. So think of it, it's like our energy shows up before we do. So if you have an attitude about something that is negative and you expect people to be negative towards you, then that's what you're going to experience, because that's what you've projected even before you arrived. So just play with this concept where you change your attitude about people internally, right? Like what you say about them internally, what you think that they're going to do, even if they've always done things a certain way, just start changing your attitude. Play with one person that it's easier. Don't do the one that you have like long-term trauma, because that's not going to happen. So let's be clear.
And it works. It does. Totally, because there will be times where like, I'm like, oh, sorry, mom, in advance. But sometimes I'll like put out like, oh, my mom, like she just keeps doing X, Y, Z. Like why, you know, she's just like, I know she's being she's the best grandma ever, the best Mimi. And, but sometimes like, I wish she would just stop like texting me all the information of school. And then I'll put that out there. And then guess what happens? She does it more. So it's just like, and that's just like a baby example. But, you know, like I've noticed that in life, that sometimes when I fixate on a certain thing of like negative, like, cause people always talk about manifestation in the positive way. But I think that people forget sometimes that it also happens if you put out negative energy, that it's going to come back to you too. Or like,
listen, that's one of the biggest, that's one of the biggest misconceptions of this idea of manifesting, is that this, that you're only going to, it's only about attracting, right? That attracting, you're manifesting is about experiencing who you're being. It's about experiencing who you're being. And your attitude about the world and about the people in it. So if you want to experience changes in your life with other people, you got to change your attitude about them internally, like internally in your internal world, in your heart, in your thinking, in your feeling about anything or anyone. That's where you're creating, like you're experiencing in real time, your attitude about life and the people in it. So start to change your attitude about the people in it. And again, play with this power, because who are you being? And wake up every day with that intention. Who am I choosing to be today? And it's not about creating perfect days. It's about moments. So how many moments in each day can you be the person you intentionally woke up to be today? So if you want to experience, people that are more fun or more joyful or more chill or more, you know, easygoing or easy to talk to, then be that. Be welcoming. And I'll give you a quick story. I went to the mall with my daughters, and my 13-year-old, she wants to be with her friends. So she's not allowed to be at the mall like without an adult at least like 2 minutes from her. But I do give her enough freedom to be like, okay, you guys walk around for a couple hours, we'll meet, we'll re-engage, and then you guys can go walk around for a little bit more. So I took my 9-year-old, and it was awesome to have that moment with her. And we went into an elevator, and there was a family in there, a young family. It was husband, wife, and there was a brand new baby, and they had like a little toddler. And she and I were walking in, and she says, oh, she goes, those doors scare me sometimes because I always think that they're going to close on me. And then I said, well, don't worry, baby. I said, that's why, like, I make sure when you walk in that, that you come in first and everything's okay. And then the gentleman, chimes in and he says, that's so funny that you mentioned that. He said, cause obviously he was really excited and proud of himself that he just did this, but he says, that's so funny. He's like, I just started, a new job as an elevator mechanic. And it turns out that my, brother-in-law is also an elevator mechanic, and they end up working at the same place. So we're having this conversation in this elevator, and she's just observing. Like, she's super, you know, intuitive and highly conscious, this child. And we, you know, it was a quick, like not even a 2 minute ride up the elevator. Right. And so we get out, and she's like, mom, she goes, you know what? I love it. She goes, because people can feel your vibe, that you're welcoming and you're easy to talk to. And people always want to talk to you. And I said, yeah, I said, baby, because that's who I choose to be. Like, I tell spirit every day, send me to wherever it is that you need me to go, whoever I'm meant to talk to. Like, I intentionally set that in motion. And that's who shows up first. Do I always do it great? No. Do I always have the best attitude? No. Do I always, you know, drive down the street with a smile on my face and keep a smile when someone cuts me off? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
That's not what spirituality is. You still get to be human, mm-hmm. but who you choose to be, how you choose to show up. And if you're intentional, you're going to have more of those moments that you're going to be a witness to the universe aligning you with people who are on that same wavelength. And that's what I mean by like tuning into the channels in a radio station. If you're in a channel, if you're already showed up as someone who's on a channel on a lower frequency where people are frustrated and aggravated and irritable and so on and so forth, and they're being, you know, not nice to you, then who are you being? Like, how are you seeing them internally? And then you can shift it and say, okay, I choose to kind of like, you know, lighten up. And it's not about getting happy. It's like, okay, let me get neutral. Let me be open mm-hmm. to engaging with people who are in a better mindset. And then just slowly move up the scale and be like, oh, okay, I met some pretty neutral people. It was nice. Like, people didn't bother me. People didn't annoy me. Like, you don't have to shoot from like being in a really bad mood to being super happy. That's not reasonable because you have to gradually move up the scale. But if you can go from like, oh, I'm so irritated and people are irritating me and I'm only encountering irritable people, then get to neutral.
Right.
And then that way you're like, oh, nobody bothered me today. And it was easier for me to kind of flow in my day and stop stressing and feeling drained, right? So just making those slight adjustments in your attitude about what's happening and who it's happening with, and you'll absolutely see a shift. And don't strive for 24 hours in a day for it to be beautiful and perfect. Just if you can have a few moments throughout your day and at the end of your day, like recognize that, sit in your awareness and be like, you know what? I chose to be this and I recognize that about myself. Tomorrow I'm going to try one more time. Like if I had one really good moment, tomorrow I'm going to shoot for two. Right?
I love that. Yeah. It's like, and I think I've mentioned in previous podcasts before that it's like baby steps, you know, when your kid is learning to walk, they're not going to go straight to just walking right away. Like it takes a little bit of time and more practice, and the more practice that they get and they learn to, you know, get off the ground, get up, and then be able to take each initial step, then they start running all of a sudden. And you don't want them to, because they're getting into trouble, you know.
Yes.
I don't even like this whole podcast. If you guys are not listening and thinking, man, I need to reach out to Cynthia Martin, I don't know, because, and that's what I want you to kind of, because I know a lot of the information you're sharing, I'm pretty sure you share these in your own sessions about reframing and attitude and, you know, but what else, I guess, can our listeners know that if they're looking into finding, you know, you said spiritual mind mastery coach, what that kind of is, and hypnotherapy coaching, what that looks like.
Absolutely. So my work is specific because I specialize in brain-based coaching, and that's trauma-informed. And what that means is that I work with people who have experienced trauma, and not all trauma is the same, because it could be something like being in a car accident, or it can be something that was in childhood and is very, very difficult to remember or reconcile. So it's whatever, there's no hierarchy of trauma, but some kind of event that has changed your brain and affects your life. And then taking that whole person approach, but from a brain body based, because we are not just psychological beings. We are mental, emotional, physical, and energetic spiritual beings. So being able to work with the brain at a much higher level. So there's working with the part that is much deeper and where all the roots are. So things that are rooted in the past, not only your childhood, but even generational stuff. So if, whether you're looking at someone that's spiritual or someone in a more conventional therapeutic setting, if you have had any of those kinds of experiences, that it's like, even if you tried therapy before, finding someone who has that specialty of understanding the trauma brain and understanding the brain body connection. And the term for that is neurosomatic. So it's like, that's one of the skill sets. to look for, because I'm going to tell you right now, as someone who's been on the journey for a really long time, the biggest puzzle piece missing for me and the clients that I work with is working with someone who understands trauma and who understands the brain body connection, because it made all the difference. Because intellectually, what I experienced, and maybe you can relate to this as well, Britt, is, you know, having all this knowledge and doing all the changes that are, you know, quote unquote, right, and still feeling like crap, and still feeling, you know, all of these underlying negative thoughts and feelings, and it makes you feel worse because you're aware of them, made it much harder to go through my healing process. And it wasn't until I found that the brain body connection has a big part of to do with that, because my body was still trying to protect me, even though my mind was thinking differently.
Yeah, I can definitely relate, because you know what, actually lately I've been, I talked about this on my last podcast, is that, I've been going through all these blood work tests lately, because, I've been feeling extremely fatigued and just super exhausted to the point, like beyond like, oh, it's just because you have three little kids. No, it's not that. It's way beyond that, and brain fog and all these things. And part of me does believe that there is like some medical part to it. But a huge part of me also believes that there's a huge spiritual component, because like, similar to your story, I've been not as long as you have been doing, but since, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago when I first had my first regression therapy, I dove in deep to reading all these books and listening to all these podcasts and just going on this like spiritual high of like, I have to get as much as I can. And then I felt like I was at a good place. And then all of a sudden I started feeling like I was plummeting, like I was at a standstill, and like,
there was plateau.
What's next? Why am I not, you know, I'm not no longer getting intuitive messages as much. I was, you know, at this point where I was connecting to even sometimes my loved ones, or like my, I call it my soul sister. And I just didn't really hear anything. And I could tell now the difference between my mind and when spirits try and connect. And, you know, I started, and then one time in the shower, because I feel like, I don't know, for me anyways, when I'm in the shower, that's when it makes me kind of zen out and kind of tune out the rest of the noise around me. So I heard in my head, like, I'm not connecting with you because you need to focus on yourself right now. You are not, you're not taking time to just rest. And that's what I kind of heard loud and clear, is that I needed to take time to, I was so worried about, you know, doing the next step and helping other people that I wasn't really helping myself. And like, I was getting the spiritual fatigue in a way. So I do think that's part of it. But it's just, yeah, I relate to what you're saying, because it's just,
and it is not brain fog. So there are, like you said, and I appreciate you acknowledging that. So there are the physical elements, and again, we get to look at ourselves from a whole perspective. So yes, we must tend to the physical aspects of ourselves, but we also get to consider that there's an element that's non-physical, and that's the mental and emotional stuff that is much deeper. And then there's an energetic. So just for your listeners, if you're not the only one experiencing that. So there's been, I would say for the last month, the extreme fatigue has been intense, and in part is because I'm really energy sensitive. So there's been a lot of solar activity. So we've had activity that is so intense, the electromagnetic frequencies that are coming from the sun have literally been reading off of the charts, that scientific instruments who measure the resonance on the planet and who measure the electromagnetic frequencies. I used to work in cable. So, and I don't know if you've ever had those messages, like usually around August is when they would come. There was like 3 or 4 times a year that there would, we'd have to send out these notifications about solar flares. And those solar flares, why we had to send out those notifications is because it would disrupt, it disrupts the technology on the planet. And so
that makes sense.
So cell towers would have interruptions, like down, you know, interruptions to connectivity and why you couldn't get Wi-Fi or why you couldn't get your TV shows to load is because during those times of solar flares, it literally was disrupting the technology on the planet. While we've been having excessive amount of solar flares since the beginning of the year. And over the last month, they have been really intense. And as a matter of fact, a few days ago, we had a reading that was like 120 hertz. It's just, so just put it on average, it's like, it used to be around 30 or 40, if I'm getting my information correct. We hit 120, like a few days ago.
Oh, wow.
Just to put it that way. Oh, okay. So it's going to affect the physical body. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes that's where like nothing is showing up on your blood work, nothing is showing up on your screens, you know, your medical screening, but it's like extreme fatigue where like it used to be in the beginning, especially, it was almost like I had narcolepsy and not to, you know, I'm not making fun of that, but it literally would be like these instantaneous moments where I just could not, I'd have to instantaneously lay down. Mm-hmm. Now I'm aware of it when my body's trying to adjust. And I have my processes on how to navigate it. And I just take a nap and I'm just very mindful. So just being very mindful of what your body is asking for. And if it needs more rest, then that's life informing you that right. There's something, you know, and look at it in the way that how children, you know, when they're having growth spurts that they sleep more and they get extra hungry mm-hmm. or they lose their appetite. We're experiencing the same thing as adults.
That makes sense. That makes complete sense. And, you know, I want to say too, like, of course, I believe in also traditional medicine, but I do want to also say that sometimes if you want to explore a holistic approach, that's okay too. Cause I feel like a lot of times, that's, you know, foo-foo stuff. Like, don't, you know, but I think that both sometimes can work together.
They complement.
You know, yeah. And I think that sometimes people think, oh, we got to choose one or the other. Or, you know, if they start, you know, trying to find a doctor that doesn't just offer medicine right away. Yeah. You know, because I've been there where I went to just real quickly when I had postpartum depression really mm-hmm. bad with my firstborn. The only way that they would see me as, you know, medically necessarily to be at home with my daughter for as long as I did was for me to keep getting medication. And after a while, then they were like, okay, well, wait a minute, you know, you've had the same dosage. Is your doctor going to up the dosage? And now I openly talk about it. But at the time, obviously, like I had to pretty much tell my doctor, you know, it's not working. I don't want to do this, but this is what they want me to do. But I didn't want to take the medication. And personally, and it was almost like, if you don't, then, you know, you're not deemed as someone, because I had like really bad depression and really bad anxiety. And I try to explain to them, but unless you were doing medication in the, you know, for the disability claim people, that's mm-hmm. all they wanted to see. So, you know, now like I try to advocate more for, you know, other women and mothers to know that like there's other ways to go, but it's sad that on pen and paper, you know, that's what they look for.
Yeah,
so.
And it's unfortunate because that's the model of care, right? That's mm-hmm. the model of care that is covered by insurance, and we're our hands end up becoming tied and we have to navigate things in that way. And that's another parallel that you and I share, because my awakening was triggered by my traumatic entry into motherhood. And I know we don't have time to go through it, but long story short, similar situation. My daughter ended up being in NICU. It was one of those scary moments where I literally was having a conversation with spirit. I'm like, okay, I'm going to be pissed. If someone has to go, it better be me. Like, and I was not negotiating. And luckily that wasn't the outcome. And it was a happy outcome, but it was a very big struggle. And that's what triggered my awakening and my pursuit for, I was always raised because of my mom to understand the benefits of natural remedies. And again, also honoring that the traditional medicine has its place, but nothing was helping my daughter, and I didn't trust my own motherhood. And I was going against my own intuition and allowing my doctor to continue to increase her script. So for 2 years, she was on antibiotics, and I don't believe in as that as a solution, but as a brand new mother, I didn't dare not give her the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And we struggled, poor thing, like for 2 years, as a result of how we came into, you know, this world, like she came into the world and I became a mother. And it wasn't until like it was in my pursuit to help her that I discovered spirituality and the energetic side of our well-being. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, I was led to a doctor that does both. And he's a chiropractor. Well, he gave up his license so that he can actually help people. And that's the unfortunate thing for a lot of my doctor friends, that they've had to do that, that they'd have to practice with, give up their license in order to really do some good. And it was through the natural in combination with the medical as a complementary to be able to help not only my daughter, but myself as well. Cause I ended up having PTSD postpartum. And unfortunately my OBGYN, who's amazing, and my the therapist that they recommended me go to, because again, that was the only way that I can take the time to get well, is if I, you know, saw a psychotherapist and got the drugs, even though I didn't take them because I don't believe in, I didn't want my kid to be taking that because I was breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. I wasn't trying to give drugs to be passed down into my baby's brain.
That was me too. Yeah. I didn't want to because of that reason as well.
You know, and it's not that I wouldn't have taken them, but I was like, no, if it means me having to deal with this and figure out an alternative way so that my baby doesn't have to be disrupted and her brain be affected, then this is how it's going to have to be. And luckily it worked out because he was the only doctor who gave me some nutritional support, and I was able to feel human again. And it wasn't until my second daughter, after she was almost two, that I understood that what I was experiencing was postpartum, post-traumatic or PTSD postpartum.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I think would be valuable for your listeners, and maybe to provide some resources. There's a really great resource that I'll you know, share the link with you so you can add here for the podcast. But it's really crucial because I thought it was, I even was harder on myself because I had all the tools and I wasn't getting better. I had the alternative tools. I had the personal development tools, and I wasn't getting better. And I felt like I was getting worse. And it's horrible to be going through that and not understanding, to be able to name what's happening to you, because then you, that mom guilt exponentially grows.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you feel like a failure in so many different ways, right? And it just affects you mentally, emotionally, physically, and not to know that. And so thankfully it opened these doors and I was able to come through and learn a lot about things so that I can help people and bring that knowledge and bring that language to be able to understand ourselves so that we can get the right help. So to your point, just to wrap all that up in a nice little bow here, is that honor whatever feels right to you, whether it's medication, but be all in with it. Like if you are accepting a treatment, don't fight it.
Mm-hmm.
Pour all your trust in it and work with it. And then consider that there might be supplemental help, because physical health is not the only thing. If you're going through something, if you're growing through some kind of difficulty or your health, you know, your mental well-being, look at what supports you as a whole person and don't put all your eggs in one basket, right? Like don't put everything, don't bet all your money on just one thing. Look at like what is also, because the mental health is a big part of healing the physical being, right? Because there's emotions connected to every ailment and they're finally starting to understand that, but consider all possibilities that align for you and explore what's right. That's bottom line. So coming back to that final question, like, you know, to find that right person, if you're looking for that mental health support and you've had difficulties, again, looking for someone who is trauma-informed. And if you can find someone who's brain-based, who understands the brain, or at least, you know, understands the brain-body connection, that's super valuable for those of us who've had those experiences. And we can really be better better supported. And if you're looking for someone who is experienced in the spiritual stuff, then there's spiritual coaches like myself. I have kind of like the bridge of those two worlds. And connect with me and just, you know, I'm going to begin to share more information on a lot of this stuff. I'm at, if you're on the professional side on LinkedIn, Cynthia Martin LA, and on Instagram, I'm at Ultimate Empowerment. So those are the two ways we can stay connected, and I'll be sharing knowledge and things, and I'll be sharing opportunities for people to work in a group with me. So if that's something that you're interested in.
Awesome. You beat me to the punch. I was just going to ask, where can they find you? So thank you so much. But yeah, I mean, I love all this information. I know that, you know, we've been on here quite a time because, you know, it's just all, I mean, you can just go on and on about all this kind of stuff.
Oh, all day.
Because yeah, it's just, it's, I mean, and anybody who goes down the spiritual rabbit hole, you know, you kind of just find more and more stuff. Like, you're always learning, always growing. So I love that. So I'm just going to kind of end with, if you're okay with it, reading for the collective. So I pulled two cards, and the first card that I have come, and this is from those who know the Rebecca Campbell Rose Oracle deck. And the Holy Grail is the first card that came up, and then the Bud is the second card that came up. Now the Holy Grail is talking about basically we're searching and searching and searching for something that's kind of outside of us, but it's within. So if you find yourself resonating with this card, it's because it's talking about that, you know, instead of looking outside and looking at everything outside of the world and everything going on outside your house, basically, you know, you got to look within, because all the talent, all the abilities, all the things that you came onto this earth with, you have all that within inside of you. And I feel called to almost, and you can chime in too, Cynthia, if you get anything intuitively, but I feel like with what Cynthia was talking about is, instead of looking at the things that we've always seen as negative, that, you know, have bad traits or whatever frame of mind you've been in, now reframing that to believe that, you know, whatever those things are that are triggering you or coming up for you, that's inner, is for you to bring it out into the world to help those, you know, kind of share your story and experiences. I don't know if you want to chime in on that one.
Absolutely. So real quick, and it's so poignant that that's the card that came in. You are the Holy Grail. You are the Holy Grail and the answer to what you are seeking. And that there's purpose in your pain, and that, so I want to share this statistic. So, in the scientists, so, they actually did the algorithm, they had an algorithm and they did the math, on the different genetic combination sequences of possibilities of how many humans could exist on this planet. And what they discovered is that there are more humans that will never exist or be born in this world than there has ever existed any human since the beginning of time to now.
Oh, wow.
So what that means is that the chances of you making it to exist on this planet, to live the life that you live, they literally, and it's even been continued to be explored, but they put a number, it's like, you know, 400 trillion to one. The odds of you existing are so unimaginable. The fact that you're here, that your purpose is much greater than you can ever think possible. So there's purpose in your pain. There's purpose in the way you think. There's a purpose in how you create. And it's a matter of remembering you and shedding all the layers of who you let other people believe, make you believe that you're supposed to be. But you have everything inside of you because you were born for a purpose with a purpose. And so you are the Holy Grail.
Yes, I love that. And then with the Bud, you know, that's also talking about that you have all the potential inside of you. So all the little seeds and all, like almost like in a garden, you know, unless you put those seeds in the garden, you plant them, you water them, you basically help them to grow and love on them, then all that's going to come out and be able to bloom into the full, like, Rebecca Campbell uses the rose. So I'm going to say the rose because mm-hmm. that's what her whole deck's about. So that's what the bud is talking about, is blooming into the rose that you are and using all those talents that you have and all those things that were like, kind of like the blueprint that we yes. all have. And so I feel like, you know, and I am like always so hard to think of my words, but when I write, like, it just comes out, and that's my talent. And that's why I have this podcast too, because it's helping me to share these experiences and stories. And so that's part of the skills and things that I'm using. And my baby is signaling to me that
yes, that's time.
So, yes. But yeah, thank you so much, Cynthia. I appreciate having you on this podcast. Yes, please, please, please do look her up and see what's more to come, because I know she is not done yet. She has so much coming. So I'm excited, but I hope you have a good, this is a Sunday today, so have a good rest of your Sunday, and we will definitely be connecting again.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Please leave feedback and let me know what topics you would like to talk about next. I'm excited to keep this journey with you, and thank you for listening to Hello Gorgeous Mama.